Welcome to Bondcast, James Bondcast, the only show that dedicates itself to the critical and comical dissection of every movie in Ian Fleming's 007 film series, once a month for 24 consecutive months, where we will be discussing one James Bond film per month in chronological order, leading up to the eventual release of the 25th entry in the James Bond series, which as of this date is still unnamed. My name is Matt McGregor, and today's episode will be focused on Her Majesty's Secret Service. The sixth entry in the 007 series, and the first to have someone else play James Bond other than Sean Connery. This time out, Bond is played by Australian model George Lazenby, who famously played the role just this one time and never returned to don the Savile Row suit again. I am, of course, joined by my two Bond-obsessed co-hosts, Harris McCabe.
Hi, Matt. I would like to compliment you on all your great reading.
Wow, thanks. And also, also here is Colin Shaw.
That's me. Hi. I'm totally off the script. So look out.
He's reading from a script. Don't let him fool you. All right, cool. So let's get it started. What'd you guys think of this movie?
That's how we're running into this thing.
Let's hit it from the beginning.
I mean, we always talk about the movie for sure.
It's been a bit since we've done this. We've all aged rapidly.
We always like 100 years old now. The gun barrel sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we watched this movie so long ago. Oh, you know what else of note? We watched this movie together. Was it this movie?
Yeah, we did. Yep,
we watched it together.
My favorite part was, my favorite part was how hard we were laughing at the way Telly Savalas smokes.
It was the most tortured way of smoking.
Ridiculous smoking I've ever seen.
But if we want to jump ahead from the beginning and start with
like way at the end.
Start with the gun barrel sequence. My only observation was that I was encouraged. So we've got George Lazenby coming in for the first time. And when I saw
and
him...
doing a great job. When am I saw right,
him,
Colin?
He's garbage.
He ruined the damn movie.
But when I saw him do the gun barrel sequence, I was like, he's kind of got Connery's like lanky grace. It was a solid, you know, like I was like, oh, this guy's sort of a good simulation of Bond.
I wrote here that in the gun barrel sequence, it's definitely not George Lazenby. It's some other dude.
You don't think so?
I don't know. Now it's been so long, I don't remember.
Well, because I was under the impression, I think I read somewhere that that they originally had that stunt double doing it for the longest time, and then they switched to Connery. But then once they made that switch, it was always the guy playing Bond always did the gun barrel sequence. But I did think that there was like, in terms of just Lazenby in general, I thought that he had some of the physicality of Connery, and that he was tall and he was kind of graceful. And I mean, the similarities pretty much ended there. But you know, he had that kind of, you know, he could have been a great Connery stunt double. Let's put it that way.
I don't think he has the wrong look. I don't even think his writing or direction is bad. I just think he's not a good actor at all.
Oh well,
apologies to the Lazenby estate.
In fact, I think
Mr. Lazenby himself.
But I think the reality
you
is
ruined
that
the movie for me.
He was not an actor. He was a model.
Completely disagree with you. I think George Lazenby, is it Lazenby or Lazenby? I'm going to say both throughout this.
Let's
show.
Just mix it up.
Lazenby.
Lazenby.
I'm going to say Lazenby.
I prefer like overpronouncing it. Lazenby.
Lazenby.
I'm going to call it Lazenby.
I think he's great, and I think, you know, so the story is, you know, I think they offered him 7 more Bond movies after this, and he completely turned it down.
Did he turn it down? Because I read that he went away to celebrate and took a cruise and just was unavailable, and then Connery said, I'll come back, and they were like, oh yeah, never mind.
I read that during production, he said he didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I actually watched, there's a documentary on Hulu called, I think it's called Becoming Bond, and it's all about his story. And, I mean, the way they paint it in that movie is that he just kind of had a change of heart, and he didn't want to, like, live the Hollywood life, and he just
turned it down. When this came out, this was a successful movie. It was, you know, it wasn't like a bomb, and everyone wasn't like, oh, I got to watch this turd with Lazenby in it. It was like, oh, we got a new James Bond, and he's pretty good. We'll see what happens.
And so, I think historically, it's considered one of the better movies.
Well, this is what, and we'll talk about this more. But I went into this with an open mind because I had heard from so many other sources, oh, this is like a totally underrated movie, and it's like so and so's favorite, and so all these famous people who love Bond are like, oh
Christopher
my favorite.
Nolan, I read it was
yeah,
his.
Yeah, a lot of people love this movie, and so I had high expectations. Let's talk about the cold open and just start getting into this
Let's just get into the meat of this thing. So the cold open, I thought was pretty good as far as cold opens go.
That's when she tries to commit suicide.
Yeah, so Bond is driving.
I've got some thoughts. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bond's driving. And I think he's just following. He like see how does he see her?
He's driving. Okay, so he's driving his car, and they withhold. They purposefully are withholding his face. They're showing him lighting a cigarette. They're showing all these other things, but they won't show his face full on. And he gets randomly passed by some woman who's maniacally speeding down the road, which doesn't make any freaking sense because she's on her way to commit suicide. So, but she can't wait even for the car in front of her to go a reasonable speed. She's got to go like...
That
so
makes
she goes,
sense to me. It's like it's a manic state. She goes from manic to depressive, and then she's done with it.
So she's manic, and she's like, "Oh, I've got to drive really fast." And then she's depressive, and she's like, "Oh, on second thought, I'll just kill myself."
Right? Yeah, manic depressive.
Okay, got it.
All
right.
When people want to kill themselves, they want to do it quick.
So Colin's got a theory. I feel like she would have been a little more melancholy if she was playing on wading into the ocean to drown. But everyone can have their own opinion.
In my professional medical opinion, she was in a manic depressive state with a violent mood swing that took her from the manic phase into killing.
So Bond sees her on the beach.
Don't some henchmen come out of?
No,
somewhere?
Yeah. So Bond sees her on the beach. He's like he decides he's going to pull over because he's like, oh, hot chick in the water, and then he's like, oh no, she's going to drown herself. Mm-hmm. So he leaps from his car.
How does he
and
know
goes
this?
To save
she's
her.
Walking into the water with clothes on.
On the beach. Yeah. Like she's not going for a clothed swim. He's convinced. And then these henchmen show up, and are they there to kill Bond? Are they there to save her? Are they like who knows why they're there? They're mostly there to have an exciting cold open, I think.
Yes.
And they attack Bond.
They're wearing classic like henchmen garb, like the same clothes.
Yeah. One color shirt.
One color shirt. Yeah. Exactly.
And then she runs off and decides not to kill herself after all while he's fighting the fight scene is the usual Bond fight scene where they ramp up the speed
and the editing.
Oh yeah. Like times a million. Except they also have a lot of this was interesting in this because this persisted throughout the movies. They had like they threw in like a 1970s style snap zoom. At the beginning, which was really kind of an editing, like a weird like filmmaking choice that we hadn't seen. The Bond franchise had been fairly conventional, but you could see it sort of evolving with the times.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of that. It had some slow-mo and some jump cuts and some like bizarre framing.
There's a lot of new things in this movie.
Well, it is from 1969, and like the 70s were like the time for new stuff.
Yeah, but it's like, who do you think you are? D.D. Allen here? You're not reinventing the... I don't know. You saw a lot of those new like pioneering techniques, but I think they were misused a lot of times here.
Well, what was the movie before that really used like that choppy editing and like speeding up fight scenes? Oh, Thunderball.
Speeding up fight scenes.
Thunderball was like the big culprit, the final like.
But like they've
sequence.
Been speeding up fight scenes from the beginning. That's just how they were trying to make it. But I mean, and then it ends with it. The whole scene ends with after he's thwarted these two guys.
He
breaks the fourth wall. He looks right at the camera and he says, "This never happens to the other fella."
Oh yeah, which I think sucks.
by
the way,
I would just like to, and this is going to tip my hand about how
he's breaking the fourth wall and he's talking about the other actor. We know you're not the same actor.
We know. You know, I can kind of get I get what they were thinking here because it's like everyone knows it, so why not just. You know, get it out there and get it out in the cold open and address it.
Don't treat me like that as an audience.
It works like
you don't treat me this way.
It works because he could be talking about the last like spy, like 006. Oh, this never happened to 006. You know, so it works.
A cop out.
It works on two levels.
It does not.
It works on two levels.
Or it doesn't work on any level. I will say that this is going to tip my hand to how I feel about this movie. But this opening sequence epitomizes all the things I disliked about that film. You've got like a totally nonsensical plot that just crams in action haphazardly. You've got like the flashy 70s era editing, but it doesn't make as much sense as when it's actually used effectively by other filmmakers, and the cheesy self-referential humor, which eventually will, like, when Roger Moore comes in, I think, hurt the franchise. Not that we've watched any of those movies ever, but but that was sort of the cold open. I was just like, okay, two thumbs down, and I hope the movie can recover from this. And then we get to our main title song. Also
lame.
Terrible.
Terrible. Lame. What song? That's what I have to say.
I can't even remember it at all.
I think I wrote here... It's just Bond music from previous movies. It's like the, it's some. I'm sure like, this theme has a name, like a proper name. You know, it's just like the love theme or something.
It's at best a mediocre theme song. It's like passable, and it's sort of like a melange of other stuff that we've seen. And then it's the half-assed silhouettes on color backdrops, and then shots from previous movies.
Shots from previous movies, yeah. Which is like the biggest.
Which they also use in the movie, right? Or no, they use the props from previous movies.
Do they?
You don't remember that scene?
Which scene?
When he goes back after the opening titles, he goes back to, he gets fired by M because he only wants to hunt Blofeld. And then he goes to his office and he has a bunch of props from the other movies, which he would never have, including the belt that got irradiated in Dr. No.
Oh yeah, and the and the garrote, the watch garrote that the other guy had in From Russia with Love, which he never even had. Yeah, yeah, it's yes. So, anybody got anything else about this? Anyone want to defend the title sequence? Because this is a famous part of these movies, and they'd been doing it long enough that this was an established thing that they nailed these title sequences.
Were they just rushing this movie out, and they just said, like, screw it? You know, the other thing is that there is a song later on in this movie that they play. I think it's, like, on the radio or something, or maybe it plays over the credits at the end. It's been so long since I've watched this movie, I don't remember. Yeah, right. I might have written
it. No, there's a
it.
Song, but they don't play it in the titles, right?
Yeah, no, there's a the Louis Armstrong. The Louis Armstrong song. Which isn't a bad Louis Armstrong song, but it's a terrible Bond song. And they knew that it was so bad as a Bond song that they couldn't use it in the opening titles.
I mean, it's
actually a catchy song, but it sounds like, you know, he does a lot of nice songs. He does La Vie en Rose. He does a lot of great, Louis Armstrong's a very excellent musician, but this was not a Bond song as we had already at this point established them to be. So they did exactly what they did in From Russia with Love, which is sort of bury it later in the movie.
Yeah. I think this is the last time that this happens, right?
Let's just take a second. I just want to know what you guys, just let's get into the Lazenby thing. Let's just address it. We've seen the movie. We have opinions on Lazenby. Matt, you think he's okay.
I'll tell you what I wrote. I wrote George Lazenby.
I've already heard you read enough. Come on.
I wrote, very good so far. Cool voice. Good actor. !
Why would you write that?
I held my mic up just so I could laugh louder. into
that. Okay. Cool voice. I think that's really all that matters here.
To me, what he's doing is like less acting and more like just behaving as like some kind of contest winner who won the like B Bond for a Day contest.
That's basically what he is.
Yeah. Well, he was not an actor. You know what I thought was that physically, I think he would have made an excellent Bond.
Had he continued, I think he would have grown into the role.
He
for
was
sure.
big. He was graceful. Yeah. He was strong. He had
his accent wasn't as good though because he was Australian.
I thought he had a pretty good Australian accent considering he was sort of mimicking the Connery.
He's not supposed to have an Australian accent.
No. I thought he had a pretty good, considering he was Australian, I think he had a pretty good like mimic of Connery's.
I thought he sounded like Roger Moore.
Half Scottish.
Yeah. When they casted Roger Moore, they sort of were like, oh, let's get a guy more like that Lazenby.
Roger Moore is like more like Southern, you know, like English accent than. Like,
yeah,
Connery is the North.
Connery is super Scottish. Yeah. I felt like Lazenby was trying to like emulate some of that, and he was, considering he was Australian, he didn't sound Australian to me. So that I would give him props for that.
But that's give him props for that just because he doesn't sound Australian, but he doesn't also sound good. Doesn't mean he sounded good.
That's a good point. I will say he had you know. Like, you saw it right away that he had confidence and he had like a little bit of charisma. Like, you could see how in the real world people were probably like
blown away by him.
Blew them away in the room.
You know,
they were like, wow.
You know when they let the person shoot from half court at halftime and then they make it? They look confident after they do that.
Exactly. And this is seeing him walk onto this movie set is seeing a guy who just hit that half court shot and then was like and could
and
hold
won
his
like
hands up at
$12,000
and but now people are like, hey, hit a bunch more
Quaker State or
and
something.
He's like, oh shit. The truth is, he isn't an actor.
Yeah, he isn't an actor,
and you could see that, and that's the difference between him and Connery. He had all the physical tools. I think he had all the charisma and the charm. And he just didn't have the acting chops, and it showed. And you know what else didn't help? I also read that, so Peter Hunt was the first time director. If you'll recall from our previous podcast, we mentioned that he was an editor on several Bond movies. He wanted to direct the last movie. They wouldn't let him. They ended up getting into trouble with when they were editing it. It was a mess. So they brought him in to fix it in the edit room. And his deal was,
I'll
fix it, but I get to direct the next one.
Right.
So this is his first time behind the camera directing, and apparently he decided that the best way to treat Lazenby, this first-time actor that had no experience, was to ignore him entirely and isolate him from the cast and crew. And that was like his strategy to get him in the right mindset of Bond, who's like this lone wolf type of guy, which... if you're a first-time actor who doesn't know what he's doing and he's probably just realizing that he's in over his head, I kind of wonder if Lazenby wouldn't have been better if he had a director who was more of an actor's director who like was
gave him
a little direction. So I'm curious if that didn't factor into this performance a little bit.
Let's move on to the girls. One girl in this movie?
There's also femme fatale, like brainwash victims.
Yeah,
the angels of death.
If there was one girl in a James Bond movie, I think that would be the end of the franchise. They'd just be like, you guys have lost us.
I think this one's really good because Diana Rigg is really good, and then the angels of death are like actually diverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're literally from all corners of the world.
Yep.
I mean, they focus on the British one a little more, but diversity.
The one girl's American, right? The one with the curly hair? Or is she British?
No, she was British. This girl right here?
Yeah, she was British.
I pulled up a photo because I think we have mixed opinions on
her. Her hair bothered me.
Yeah. Her hair's great. I like it.
It looks nice in that picture you just pulled up, but she had like, it looked like they just took a scissor and just went like, just like cut the back. She had like something weird going on in the back. I don't know if you could try and pull that up. You can't really see it in that picture.
I'm going to Google that.
Also, this is a podcast, so nobody can see this.
This is the most important part of the podcast.
Do we know her name at least? Can we at least name check her?
Her Angela Sklar? Angela Sklar.
Her real name? No one cares about her.
Well, anyways, so our main Bond girl is Diana Rigg, though.
Yeah,
Diana Rigg. We all know from Game of Thrones as what's her name?
Tyrell.
Lady
Tyrell.
Yep. She's also old
lady.
Emma Peel.
She's Emma Peel from the Avengers TV series. She replaced Honor Blackman on the Avengers, who of course
was also a Bond girl.
A Bond girl named Pussy Galore in Goldfinger.
Mm. She was also in the Great Muppet Caper, yes, which I just watched the other day.
Yeah,
I saw Diana Rigg. I was like, fantastic. "What up, girl?"
Just because of her, and all prompted the Muppets loved her. Discussion about the.
And we were talking about Muppet genitals.
Yeah,
earlier.
So, like, obviously the Muppets have some sort of attraction to Diana Rigg. We want to know how that works chemically. Does it have to do with their Muppet genitals?
What Colin is asking is, do Muppets get boners? And
they can ride bikes. I know that from watching this movie.
I don't know what that has to do with erections, but I'm just gonna go with it. It's worth pointing out that Emma Peel was already because of a role in the Avengers where she wore, you know, these sort of
tight
jumpsuits. She was already kind of a sex symbol. So that makes her a little... I mean, a lot of the Bond girls had some history and were notable in some way, but she was, I think she was one of the more famous sex symbols as a Bond girl.
I think also at this point, and I think we kind of touched on this last time, that spy culture is becoming huge in the late 60s. Like, James Bond kind of set off this like spy bomb, like everything is spy related on TV and in movies, and so the Avengers is something that already exists clearly, and they cast her to bring her into, you know, this movie because of that.
Yeah.
So I think you're probably right that she probably brought some sort of fan base with her.
And they had tried once before to integrate some of these TV show characters into the Bond franchise, but this was sort of their other way of going around about it. It was to sort of bring in one of the actors from that thing.
Yeah, but I mean, since we're
she's good in the role too.
Yeah,
she was
great in Game of Thrones.
She's great. She's got like a really like distinctive way about her that's very memorable.
And this is also So are we going to get into the whole like this is the one where Bond gets married thing?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah, like she's the one, you know.
So I mean, just quickly, like she starts off. She's the daughter of this like crime boss.
Italian crime boss.
Yeah, and
but they're in Portugal when they go.
Should we do the plot now? Like, should we just try?
Well,
to get
let's
through?
Quickly just sort of like touch upon these elements of the plot that like can help us better it's explain important. Like yeah
her arc.
Right. Yeah. Right. So she wants to kill herself because
why does she want to kill herself?
She's really rich and crime, I guess.
Yeah, I think she had a okay. I think they delve into her history a little bit, that she had a checkered past and she had like a bunch of like a bad relationship. She was married before, once before, right. and it didn't go well. And so it's like a combination of like she's like a
it's probably
a sullied woman and you know
right she had a bad relationship and then she's like okay well I'm like this crime boss's daughter and like that's not relatable
who
to
will
anyone
want me
else.
Now I'm just gorgeous and rich
but no like
who would have me
but it makes you it makes it hard for her to relate to someone like. It's not just like every guy off the street is like looking for specifically that.
And
besides
also,
the fact that it, she is
and
rich.
Also her father is a little overprotective, has bodyguards,
right?
Like thugs following her around.
He's not
all
just
the time.
A rich father. He's a rich father with like killer people
but
on
he's,
the payroll.
But he's concerned about her, and he's concerned about her and her depression and her, you know, well-being. And that's why he actually encourages James Bond. He's like
she offers him money to marry her.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. She needs a good shtupping and
a scene that would be less awkward if
and a guy
Lazenby could act.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
But he feels that she needs a guy to help her, you know, settle down and get, you know, get back on the horse, so to speak. And George Lazenby is that guy, that big eared goonie guy.
So just get back on the quickly horse. Explaining her arc. She's there in the beginning. They're kind of getting along. It's great. And then he goes off on his adventure in the Swiss Alps. She disappears for a while. He has this crazy chase out of the down the mountain.
You're leaving stuff out. Okay.
We're getting really into the plot
look,
here.
In the scene with the father's like, I'll give you money to marry her. And he's like, no, I'm not about that. I want to catch Blofeld. You can tell me where Blofeld is, and I'll still like try to do this thing. And then that's when they start like the courtship. And then, of course, the guy finds out where Blofeld is, and that's when he goes to Switzerland. Because he says, I know a Swiss law firm that has some kind of contact with them. So then he goes and investigates the law firm. He finds out Blofeld is in contact with the coat of arms guys, whatever they're called.
The
British genealogists.
Yeah, British genealogists. And then he poses as the British genealogist.
Because Blofeld's trying to steal a British title.
He wants to be the Count de Blochamp.
Yeah, he's trying to impersonate.
And he wears that big coat that like covers his, you know, like you can't see his arms. You know what I'm talking about? And the reason that happened is because he broke his arm on the set, and he had a cast on.
Who broke his arm?
Lazenby.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he's posing.
Oh, yeah,
because
he did a stunt, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point is, she disappears for half the movie, and then at the end, when he's in this epic chase, she comes out,
shows
of, nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
That's not even the end, though, because that's like a big chunk of the middle, because that chase is like a 30-minute-long chase scene with little interruptions for them to roll around in the barn and him to see her ice skating. And
so you want Colin already did the beginning of the plot. Let's just jump in and say that, like, you know, when he goes into Blofeld's place, which is Blofeld has this fake allergy research institute, but it's really just a front for him brainwashing beautiful young women to be carriers of biological toxins and basically assassins. So he's hypnotizing them.
Well, they're not assassins. They're going to destroy the world's crops.
They're going to destroy the world's crops by carrying biological agents.
Destroy the world's food supply.
Right.
Decimating the population.
So he's brainwashing them and hypnotizing them under the guise of algae research.
Which I remember when we were watching this, you guys were like, this plan is really lame. And I'm like, no, it could be a cool, intimidating plan. It's just like the way it comes across is really stupid.
Because it's
it
cartoony.
Yeah, it's cartoony.
And idiotic, yeah.
Well, I think I had said, I can't remember if I said it on the last episode or to you guys in person, but like I get a kick out of how between like the whatever time has passed from one movie to the next, like Blofeld has devised this like plan that seems like he's been planning
it for
years. Yeah, it would take his whole life. Yeah.
To me, it's a scary plan, but it's not scary the way you see it in the movie.
And also the him trying to become a British title
why?
Has nothing to do with any of this plan.
Why did
you
want that?
Totally secondary thing, which basically is the way Bond gets access to his place.
Yeah.
Now Blofeld figures out when Bond shows up. Posing as his genealogist, who is like this dandy kind of, you know,
Sir Hillary.
Sir Hillary, whatever. He's looking, he's trying to look like a wimp. He wears a kilt. So Blofeld immediately figures out who he is. Of course, right. All the women that are there suffering from allergies want to bang him.
Sexy and allergies. Yeah,
with the girl, yeah. The girl with the short, weird short hair and the circled glasses.
They're allergic to everything but boning. And so Blofeld, of course, figures out who Bond is because, by the way, they've met before. So he decides...
When he had a huge facial scar that has suddenly disappeared.
The facial scar.
And he's played by a completely different actor.
With a totally different accent. He doesn't have the weird accent anymore. Now he sounds like he's an American. But which is unexplained.
They meet in this movie as if they're meeting for the first time, and it's completely unaddressed that, yeah, they had a whole encounter in the previous movie.
Absolutely, right.
And maybe the movie
right
before.
Maybe the fact that they both have completely different faces is why they just didn't bother to address it.
Yeah.
But, of course, Blofeld captures
him.
But
nobody smokes like Blofeld.
And he holds, oh, let's get to that.
He holds the cigarette like he's chastising you with, like, a small golf pencil. You know, like he's, like, waving a golf pencil at you to tell you you've done something wrong. But that's how he's smoking. So then he brings it to his mouth in like a weird sensual way.
Right. It's like, yeah. How would you describe this?
And forefinger, but like close your, like take your hand straight forward so that your fingers point away from you. Then curl your index finger into your thumb. And then imagine the cigarette is like pointed straight up in the air with the bottom coming out of your thumb. And then you... You put that in your mouth.
Like, okay, so how about this? How about if I just say pretend that you were going to place a golf ball on a golf tee and then lay down on the ground and place that golf tee in your mouth so somebody could hit it off of you? That is how he smokes his cigarettes. It's totally bizarre.
Without
it's
laying down on the ground.
Strangest thing.
And keeping the top point of the cherry of the cigarette always pointed as much up towards the sky as you can, even when you're smoking it.
Beyond the bizarre smoking thing, can we say anything else about Telly Savalas? Because Telly Savalas, he wasn't Kojak yet. He was just this American actor who'd been... He was Pontius Pilate in The Greatest Story Ever Told, and he'd been Maggot in The Dirty Dozens, which was pretty memorable. But he, you know, he was a very American actor, and he was replacing Donald Pleasence, who had done this very weird Scarface, weird accent Blofeld.
Yeah. That was a good Blofeld, in my opinion.
I would have liked to see that Blofeld continue. Yeah. And I think that's the one, of course, like Austin Powers made it famous, you know. That's what we think of when we think of Blofeld. But it's funny, yeah, that character version of him only exists in, like, you know, a few minutes at the end of that one. What movie was that?
You only live twice.
And he has a henchwoman here who is
Irma Bunt,
almost the same as the ones we've seen before.
Exactly. Yes. Who is the one older from German woman from Russia with Love?
She had a very similar name, Rosa Klebb.
Rosa Klebb.
That's it. Yeah.
And she's actually just kind of a chaperone for these girls that are, you know, human biological bombs until the very end. And she
bombshells.
And she actually manages to survive this film and is never brought to justice and could still be out there today.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's on the
Don't
list.
Don't scare us.
But most of the villains in this film are just sort of cannon fodder for Bond. There's no one really memorable. And the only reason any of them are threatening is because there's a lot of them. Like, random henchmen just pop out of the woodwork when he needs them.
Yeah. I think this is a good Blofeld, though, just because he's so weird.
I think aside from the smoking, is he? He's
still kind of weird.
What's weird is like his motives and his plan.
He's jolly.
And the fact that he's American, but he's supposed to be not American.
Isn't he kind of jolly?
He is, which is weird, right? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to kill everyone. I'm so excited about it.
He is just as stupid as the other Blofeld, though, because when he does catch Bond, as the other Blofeld did, he doesn't just murder him. He throws him in a room.
Puts him in a room with an open wall.
And it's not even, it's not even a room. He doesn't stick him in a room. It's not like you think with his fortress here, he would have like one room that's dedicated, that doesn't have any other doors. That would be like, you could lock him in a closet. Yeah. But instead, he puts him into a room where the gears for the tram that brings people up and down the mountains are.
The gondola.
Yeah. So he puts him in the room.
Because we forgot to mention that they're at the top of a mountain.
We mentioned that they were in Switzerland.
You have to take a ski lift kind of gondola thing.
Yeah, you
got to
take the gondola up there.
So, of course, as soon as he locks Bond up in this...
They're above like a winter sports Swiss town.
Yeah, he locks Bond up and Bond immediately climbs out the big opening.
But literally, it's not a window. It's like an opening in the wall.
Yeah.
Bigger than the size of a human being.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And then he escapes and he ventures down to the village and the henchmen are in hot pursuit and we get some fun skiing scenes.
But this takes forever. Him getting out of the little room with the hole in it is like a 15-minute scene because the gondola has to like start coming at him and he has to start over.
Oh yeah.
He does something we don't need to see him do.
Doesn't he put his shoes on his
start over?
Doesn't he put his shoes on his hands?
No, he rips out his pockets, the insides of his pockets,
so he doesn't get hurt. His hands
hurt.
It's
a sequence that should take like 3 minutes.
Then
tops.
He skis for 20 minutes, and half the time he skis, you see him in front of a green screen looking over his shoulder.
Is this the first skiing scene we've seen in a Bond movie? Have we done this yet? Because it becomes kind of a Roger Moore skis. Yeah. They
cliche
becomes a big thing. But I think this is the first time we see a lot of like skiing stunts. Yeah. And there's some pretty cool, I mean, aside from
James Bond can ski.
It's intercut
with... This guy can fucking ski.
He is a snow bunny.
this is one of those things, like, when I was young, when I always used to watch it, I always used to imagine, like, James Bond in the spy school with the other spies, and they start testing him on all the aptitude for all the different random-ass things he could possibly have an aptitude in, and he just keeps, like, succeeding wildly.
I picture them
all
with
the
blindfolds
other spies
on, and they're all sipping wine, and he's like, this is a cognac, 1937, whatever, you know.
Yeah, but
James
I imagine
Bond
them, like, they're, like, you know, the other guys, they're shooting pretty good, they're running pretty good, and then they put him out on the mountain, and then they watch him ski down.
He's, like skiing,
a slalom
he's skiing backwards and shooting targets as he goes. I'm like, shit, this guy's pretty
and
good.
And they're just like, what the fuck?
I always, whenever I see these things, I'm always like, my God, what if I ended up in a situation where I had to ski for my life and all I could do is a snowplow thing where I'm doing like
French
little,
fry pizza?
The little pizza wedge.
Yeah. French fry pizza.
I'm going down the Black Diamond Slope with
looks
people
like,
in hot
looks
pursuit.
Looks like
he
French fried
wedging.
When he was shooting a pizza.
Well, you're going to have a bad time.
It's interesting because my dad was in the Special Forces, and in the Special Forces, he learned to ski.
Whoa, is your dad James Bond?
And he learned to rock climb and rappel and stuff like that because they actually do like some of these... You know, they do train these people in these things. I don't know if they train them to like stunt ski like Bond does in this movie. No, it's pretty amazing, though. Yeah.
What about bobsled?
I don't think
he drives a bobsled.
I think we've got the next big Bond action sequence for the next movie. We should.
Like, how many months would it take for a full winter sports training for a special forces guy?
Just in case, you know. Just
it's
in
like
case.
Someone
you
watched the Winter Olympics and yeah, exactly. They were like, "We need to put Bond in this."
There's all of it. There's
this is awesome, but we need
also,
more curling.
There's a freaking demolition derby on snow or whatever. Remember the chase scene goes on for an hour.
That was amazing.
That's part of it.
I mean, I think this winter sports in this are kind of, and they do have a curling scene.
Yeah,
they
that's
literally
right,
fit
they
curling
do.
In this
there's
movie.
Ice skating, curling.
I think this movie was sponsored by
there's,
the.
Yeah, yeah.
The
there's
Olympics.
Like ski jumping. There's luge and moguls
maybe,
and
maybe whatever Swiss town it was is like we're gonna like put our bid for the Olympics. We'll get it all on film by sponsoring this movie.
Hold up, guys! I think this is a good time to mention that our normal engineer C-Rock is. He's out sick today, and he'll be out for next episode, too. Taking his place is our lovely friend, Zach, otherwise known as Control-Z. How you doing, Zach?
He's giving us the thumbs up.
Hey, Zach, I got a question. have you seen this movie?
No.
You're supposed to say hell no, because that's kind of like
right.
a...
Yeah, you have to say hell no.
I'll give you another shot. Zach, have you seen this movie?
Hell no.
See, that's more like what we're used
but
to.
But in general, big James Bond fan?
Not at all.
Are you following what we're talking about at all? A little bit. And I'd like to say that his little bit was more than an inch between his finger and thumb. So it
feels
may
like
be more
lot.
Than a little bit.
Yeah.
He may be saying a lot of bit with his
Zach, did you appreciate heart. our Colin's lovely description of how Blofeld smoked a cigarette? Do you ever smoke like that? It's like... Like pointed up like this. I wish we had something that you could like. Do we have a pen or something over there?
It's it is kind of amazing.
It's weird.
Yeah. Here, Colin, you do it. I feel like you'll nail it.
And everyone in.
Yeah.
Colin is currently.
He smokes like this several times in the movie. God. It's really weird.
It's bizarre. Just, I feel like there should be. We should have this on YouTube somewhere. Donald Pleasance smoking as Blofeld.
No, it's Savalas.
Telly Savalas.
All right, let's get back to the plot quickly, and then we'll sum up the twist ending.
So Bond escapes skiing down the mountain. He gets to the bottom, and then he finds himself trapped by the henchmen. And then, luckily, who shows up? But his girlfriend Tracy. Who
somehow
is,
knew exactly
she,
where he was.
Why is she even here? The last time he saw her, she was in Italy
awesome.
Or something.
She's like, hey, you know, I think something might be going on. I'm going to follow him.
And by the way, I would have thought like, oh, hey, maybe she's in on it. Maybe there's some other... Nope.
No.
She just happens to be vacationing in Switzerland. She sees him running from bad guys and escapes. That's when they get into this awesome car chase that busts randomly. They're being chased by the bad guys. She's in a car. He's in a car. And they bust into a... a demolition derby on ice. Where,
or it's like some kind of like rally, like rally race, snow rally car.
It's like NASCAR,
something.
but they're on in like snow. Minis and they're yeah. and they're on ice and they're just sliding around and crashing.
And
into
the track's
each other.
Not very long either, so they do have to crash into each other. But it is a race, so it's not just crashing into.
It's
each
not
other.
A demolition derby.
Demolition derby no, has no finish like line. A, I guess they just run into.
Yeah,
each
I guess
other.
That's just
this
they just
has
try
a finish line,
each
like
other.
A starting.
This is a race of some kind. It is bizarre, and it was fun. I thought it was cool.
Yeah,
it would have been cool if it wasn't part of a chase sequence. That like
lasts
never
for
ends.
Hours
because he escapes the hole in the wall, which took too long. Then he skis, which takes a really long time. Then he's running around in the town and goes into like little rooms and stuff, and they're chasing him through that. And then he like goes and decides to sulk by the ice skating rink, and he's like about to cry or something. And then homegirl shows up looking all like with the glow. She's like, oh. And then he's like, oh yeah, let's go get in the car and like run away some more. And then they chase him some more
into
and
the derby.
Then he like tries to go to a phone or something, and then they chase him some more in the cars.
But
and
they finally
then
end
they
up,
get into
they
the
finally
racetrack.
End up escaping, and they end up in a barn where something very unexpected happens.
Yeah,
they bone.
They
well, no, that that is like he the
says,
most. Expected
James Bond says, "I love you,"
and he proposes
marriage.
Wow. Yes.
After all that, I would too.
Yeah, after that 8-day chase sequence.
I can't say. I'm pretty sure that sequence was longer than my life. So
in the morning, they are caught in an avalanche that Blofeld created, and Tracy's captured.
After more ski chasing.
and Tracy, the girlfriend, is captured. The fiance now is captured. And Bond tells M that they can't attack Blofeld. And then M, because he's got Tracy hostage, and he's holding the world for ransom, and blah, 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 blah. So M says that the world's just going to pay the ransom.
I thought he did want to attack, and M was like, it's too dangerous. Because he does, because he convinces the dad to attack.
Yeah, M is saying that they can't attack because they have to pay the ransom. And Bond's like, no, we're going to attack. So he gets the gangster dad to get a bunch of attack choppers.
Which
together.
Is another scene that takes way too long. Remember the radio thing?
Oh, my God.
Do you have notes on that?
Oh, no, I don't.
Because I remember us laughing so hard about
how long that radio scene takes.
Because they're radioing the guy. He's like, we're with the Red Cross. We're just going to like Geneva or whatever.
And yeah,
like,
so we
don't have you on the charts. And then this conversation goes back and forth for a full 10 minutes.
They have these attack.
We don't have you on the charts.
Attack
no, we're with the
choppers.
Red Cross. It's fine.
Are heading for Blofeld's. They're heading for Blofeld's lair, and they're attack choppers, but they're disguised as Red Cross aid choppers.
Yeah.
And they have this long exchange where Blofeld's guys are like, "We're gonna shoot you out of the sky," and they're like, "No, don't, because we're just aid people." But they're lying,
literally over and over. We're Red Cross. No, you're not. We're Red Cross. No, you're not. We're Red Cross. No, you're not.
Long story short, Bond rescues Tracy. Draco's people rescue Tracy. Bond escapes before the hideout explodes, inevitably, as they all do.
Yeah.
And Blofeld seems like he's going to be killed.
This is when we get the bobsled chase. Right?
Yeah, we got it. Yeah.
I've been waiting for the bobsled. Yeah,
we got this. So at the
he's
end
got
of
that Texas Longhorns bobsled.
So just in case you thought we were kidding before about how this works in so many winter sports, is there's actually a bobsled chase. Literally, Blofeld escapes from his exploding lair in a bobsled, and Bond sees him doing this and is like.
Grabs another bobsled
and takes off
as you would.
Him, as you would. Catches up with him, throws him out of his bobsled, throws Blofeld
no,
out
I thought,
of...
I thought he ran into a tree
yeah,
that grabbed him by the neck.
He throws him out of the bobsled, and Blofeld is basically like, you know, runs into like the
branch
of a tree and gets his neck caught and apparently appears to be dead. Leaving us to go to Bond and Tracy's wedding many months later, where they become happily married and they ride off into the sunset to live happily ever after.
Only to get shot at from a nearby hill.
Yeah. You didn't tease that at all.
Yeah,
you
I
just
know.
Like dropped it really bad.
So they decide to take some of so they're driving through
I'm
like
trying to move this thing along.
Tracy gets killed.
Driving through the hills.
Come on, let's go. Tracy gets
and
killed.
And they pull the car over and Irma Bunt and Blofeld drive by. Just randomly, they're just like in the neighborhood. Blofeld's got a big neck brace on, and they machine gun Bond and Tracy. And Bond is like hops into the car. He's like, "That's Blofeld. Let's go kill that motherfucker." And then he looks over, and Tracy is dead,
full on dead.
And Bond weeps.
Yes,
on
the
camera.
Only
he
time
is so moved
ever.
And the policeman comes, and he's like, "Are you guys okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, we'll be fine. We're gonna move on here in a little bit." No clever quips or anything. He's very sad.
He says,
no, he's like delusional.
He's
like, we'll
yeah,
be, like, yeah, we've got
yeah,
all the
time
in the world.
We're
fine.
It just needed a little.
But he's weeping. Yeah. It would have been a really moving scene if, Lazenby could act.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Ouch. So I think this movie, for what it's worth, had a lot of firsts. They tried a lot of new things.
Oh, that scene tried we just talked about, though, is so, like, in James Bond, we see huge layers blow up and, like, giant, you know, like, in all the movies, you see, like, you know, technology you've never seen before, weapons, vehicles you've never seen before, and literally they just like roll by in like an old Mercedes and shoot with like a regular
dispatched
gun.
Yeah.
I think that some of the things is I think one of the interesting things that I thought was cool was like the ski stunts, the stock car race and ice. There's bullfight footage. That's pretty cool. And
How much time are we at?
35 minutes.
Oh really? See, we're doing good.
Yeah, we're burning it up.
Yeah.
We've still got 6 hours to go.
Let's go.
No, the bullfight scene was cool. Like, all the travelogue stuff, as usual, was pretty cool. But they stick to a lot of the weird winter sports tie-in.
I would want to visit this totally Swiss town, bizarre. To be honest.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think the James Bond movies try to, like, show you places. They're trying to build tourism for places, you know? That's why he's sort of a globe.
Just the plot in general, though. Blofeld's plan, this is, like, particularly dumb, even for a Bond movie.
Well, like I was saying, it's like a scary plan on paper. Like, when I was reading the description of the plan in Wikipedia, I was like, this sounds scary. But when I remembered watching the movie, I was like, this guy's ridiculous smoking, and I'm not sure it makes sense what he's talking about either.
But also, he allows it to be derailed by his pursuit of, like, some British title that's...
Count de Bluchamp.
Yeah, Count de Bluchamp.
I just love that Blofeld is an expert in all things, like... bad guy,
nefarious. He's down.
Like the last movie was all about what, like dismantling rockets, right? Like,
oh yeah,
right, yeah, rockets, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like he knows all about that. Now it's all about
rocketry to biological warfare.
Although, warfare.
I feel like he's got all the like he's a like, very detail oriented guy, but he's not a great bigger picture strategy guy. He seems to just do a lot of dumb shit to that shoots him in the foot in the end.
Yeah. Well, and there's always that classic inability to like kill your enemy.
Like,
even though you're evil.
Yeah. He appreciates the back and forth. He likes the little cat and mouse a little too much. And also, I just want to point something out because we haven't mentioned this. Let's pour some out for the random blonde guy who likes so many Bond sidekicks before him.
Big blonde guy.
Pops up.
Oh no, the sidekick guy.
The little blonde guy, the little blonde backpacker British guy who helps Bond out in numerous ways.
He gets hanged or something,
unceremoniously lynched and hung from a mountaintop and will not be appearing in the sequel. Yeah. He joins a great history of Bond sidekicks who do not end well and make a one film appearance.
I will bring up another...
Good job by him, though.
First, I think, or possibly we've had one of these in the past, but you guys tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe we see some nip in this one. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
We've definitely had nip in the past.
Barn scene? Really? Me?
No, I wrote here, there's a gag where he has, there's this whole sequence we didn't mention where, let me see if I remember.
There are several sequences we didn't mention. This wasn't a short
someone's
movie.
Office, I forget who, and like, they send up something on a crane or whatever, like into the window. Do you remember?
That's when they're investigating the lawyer in Switzerland. Lawyer has a tie to Blofeld.
There was a labyrinthine plot line of like a lawyer, which is how they got to the genealogist, which honestly, it was bizarre and hard to follow and really boring.
But he cracks his safe and he has to do it before the guy gets back to the office. But he does it. And on his way out, he grabs a Playboy magazine.
Oh, right. I remember that.
And he, like, you see him look and you can see some nudity in the Playboy magazine.
So you're talking about a nip in a Playboy magazine?
No, there's more.
I was going to say, we've seen nips in two title sequences, by the way.
Title sequences don't count. Well, they're silhouette nipples. That's not the same.
I'm just saying. But didn't we also see one? Didn't we also see one? No, I think there was pasties on that one.
There was a pasty. You see the girl, Ruby, the Angel of Death girl, when he, like, goes to bed her, she, like, the sheet, like, or whatever comes down and you see her. And they didn't.
Are you sure that isn't when Irma Bunt is in her bed in her place, which I found very shocking? There's a scene where Bond basically is stooping one of these girls that's at this allergy clinic, and he's sneaking off to a room via this way of him breaking out of his room by thwarting the automatic electric doors. And they figure out about it, and this is when they capture him, is that he sneaks into her room for a little tryst, and he's like, oh, hey, baby, I'm here, give you the big JB, you know what I'm saying? And he crawls into bed with her, and she turns around, and she's not the hot young thing he was after, but she's this older matronly woman who, like, is like, you know, like, just her reaction is terrifying.
Let's do it, Pond.
Yeah, not what he was expecting.
I don't think she's interested in that.
Yeah, no, she definitely didn't seem DTF there.
Yeah, so let's talk about some other things. I mean, we did the whole plot pretty quick for us. It didn't take an hour and a half. I mean, what else is there? Well, the gadgets?
There's not a lot of
gadgets. I think the fact that there were bobsleds is just lit.
Yeah, I mean, that makes up for any.
I like how the one looks like it's like a Texas Longhorn.
Can we talk about the bizarre Q scene in this? Do you guys remember this? A scene, it's like the first scene in the movie after the cold open, where Q is explaining to M that the future is in miniaturization, and then he shows him some radioactive lint or something.
I wrote that, lint.
And then that never comes in, neither miniaturization or radioactive lint ever comes into play again.
Yep.
What?
I feel like that's like, they're like, we're still paying for this guy to be in a scene, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they
had him under contract, yeah, but not in the script.
He's basically writing his own scene at that point.
Exactly. Here, Bond, some lint. Yeah.
But yet they had that cool safe cracking machine thing. They could have teased that at the beginning. It was such a bizarre thing to have.
They paid that actor and they did not write him into the thing. They were like, oh, we're still paying this guy to like be in the movie, and like he's not in the script.
So what about the quips? Because I felt like this was where the Bond films really, I felt them starting to turn into what we'll get to know later on as like the cheesy quip fests. It was like just a little too self-aware, a little too corny. I mean, starting with the opening scene, but there's a scene where Bond kicks some guy's ass and throws him through some kind of trellis and says gate crasher, you know, which is a lame joke. But then he takes
what was that one when the guy
then
falls
he takes
off
a bite
the
of caviar and he's like, Royal Beluga, north of the Caspian. It's like so cheesy and trying too hard. Like look how
I wrote one.
Yeah, but Roger Moore can do that.
I wrote one, but I don't remember the
Roger
context.
Moore can do that. Yeah.
I wrote, he had lots of guts. So I guess someone get chopped up or
something? The
guy
who fell into the snow machine.
Yeah, there's
one of the machines that eats the snow.
One of the skiers that's chasing him falls into a snowblower and gets mulched.
Do we see blood?
That was disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Also, we see a lot of blood everywhere. Like, it shoots bright red snow all over the damn place.
That's what's missing from these Bond films. Like, really gory deaths like that. And he just makes, like, a funny quip about someone's brutal, like,
I will say there was one innuendo there, like there was one great exchange that I loved when Tracy is holding a gun on him and she goes, what if I were to kill you for a thrill? And he's like, I could think of something more sociable.
That's pretty
Bond.
Good.
And then they bone.
Yeah.
What a great actor.
No. Don't you wish it was a great actor?
I bet he ad-libbed that.
No, he didn't. In ad lib at all.
I think we've like nailed a lot of the important things about this movie. Like,
what about like the effects and some of the other like? We always talk about the sets. Were there any sets that stuck out to you? Because all I can think of is
compound.
That
the allergy compound is pretty cool. But
the allergy compound was great until it exploded at the end, where it was a cardboard model and it looked like a cardboard. Like, we could make a cardboard model with stuff in your house right now that looked as good as that.
Do we know if Ken Adam was the production designer on this one? Something tells me he wasn't.
Because we didn't see any of those.
Oh, those grandiose,
yeah, we should
like
look that up
sets.
because we're used to, we're spoiled by him. Stuff. He has been doing such a stellar job. It actually, we had that theory earlier that maybe this was a little bit rushed or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's him, then this was definitely like I would buy into that even more because he, you know, in general has done a phenomenal job with all these sets. There's the avalanche looked good, but that was only because they actually used actual avalanche footage. There were also, did you notice there were little touches of animation in some of the avalanche footage? And also, like, when that tram fell.
The gondola?
The gondola. When the gondola fell, like, they animated the cables, so they, like, flopped all over the place, which was probably impressive at the time, but, like, when you look at it now, it's super cheesy.
The production designer was Sid Kane.
There you go.
Oh, well, Sid Kane has been the production designer on a couple other ones, too.
Really?
Because Ken Adams was also the art director on some of these, or Sid Kane, actually, maybe Sid Kane was the art director on some, so this may be his first time as the production designer. Yeah, but this was the first movie that I was not wowed by really any of the sets that much.
Well, that place was like as is, I think. They like found a some place up on a mountain and they were like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, a lot of location
shooting. It's probably like a spa or something. Yeah. Well, I was going to say before that, you know, we talked about this movie a lot, but I think more importantly than any of the like smaller facets of this movie is like it's sort of legacy as, you know, we touched on it in the beginning, George Lazenby being the only Bond to do a one and done sort of thing, and like why he didn't come back, and then more importantly that
Bond gets married.
Yeah, like a lot of big you know, plot points happen in this movie that they never try again. Bond gets married, his wife gets killed. Yeah. Bond, it ends on a dour note, right. You know, like
yet so much of it is stuff that they've just rehashed. Like it's still so many. I thought like one of the best things of a lot of Bond movies is the big finale. Which this was the this was the first one where I was like a little fatigued by the henchman on henchman fight and the headquarters explosion and everything.
Yeah,
and I was just like
it goes out with a whimper.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
That last scene could have been powerful, I think.
I mean, they could have included her death into like one of the chase sequences, like after she agrees to marry him.
Well, you know,
did you guys
read that this was originally envisioned as the beginning of the cold open of the next James Bond movie?
She was going to die.
She was going to die. Oh.
And then they were like,
let's get it. Yeah, let's put it in here.
Well, I think they never, it's not, they do kill his lovers, right, in other ones, but it's never the end of the movie.
His lovers basically die.
Only this one has that.
All the time.
Only this one has him actually getting married, because we do actually see the wedding. And only this one has the one and done actor.
And it is addressed once or twice, like in later movies where they make reference. There's one where he's
the wife.
He's at a cemetery, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think possibly, is it the next movie? No.
Occasionally there's a line where it's like, you know, something bad happened before. You know, basically like there's an exchange between him and like a possible lover or whatever where they're like, you know, what's your deal? In some way they ask what his deal is, and in some way he says something bad happened. And it's always like really vague, but a reference to like his wife dying.
But also, did you guys, let me just ask this, to look at it a different way. Did you guys feel this romantic subplot at all? Did this make sense to you? Because I love Diana Rigg. I thought she was a great Bond girl, but I didn't get why she was
the one.
And I felt like there was a lot of reasons why she had red flag all over her, you know? So I kind of, even with the extreme situation of where and how he proposed, I wasn't buying it. I was not convinced.
I think she was great. I think they had a lack of on-screen chemistry, but not...
I know who you blame for that.
Yeah, but not on fault of her. And then I think the sequence in which we see the courtship is all montage with no dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, I don't think
you
it's.
You see them
I don't
falling in love, but it's all.
I don't think
a
it's her fault.
Edit of them walking around trying to look happy.
I don't think it's her fault, and I don't think it's particularly his fault. And I even think their chemistry when they first meet each other wasn't that bad, but they didn't sell it as like on a script level or you know in the
I think the idea is that whenever they stress the love story with Bond, it's like only this woman can understand the assassin. You know, like the only woman who can understand his dark side or his downside or whatever is usually how they play it. And I think they did a little bit of that here, but not
enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Let's get into how we rank this movie.
Our 00 scale.
Where does it stand amongst the others?
Who wants to go first? I think Colin. we're not going to have much drama here, so let's hear it, Colin.
I do want to say before we get into this, like I want to institute a thing here. When we reach the end of an actor playing Bond, I think we should try to like rank, or at least like you know maybe our intern.
So far,
yeah.
But we can't do it yet.
I think he's going to be number two so far.
We can't do it yet for Connery because obviously he comes back. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But and then of course we can't really do it for Lazenby because we've done it already.
He is definitely number two. I would say that.
He's last. Always last.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, he is a big number two.
All right. Ruins the movie.
Colin, 00 scale. Give it to us. What do you got?
I don't know. Like, did you look at what like our highest and lowest was so far?
No, I didn't get a chance.
Just like
You guys trash From Russia with Love. I feel like you guys are.
I'm going to give it like a 2.5 or a 3.
Wow. I love bobsleds. 2.5 or 3.
I love bobsleds. I like some of the things that went on. Diana Rigg was amazing. But he just really ruins it. And then the fact that there's like an hour long part of the movie that's literally really just one chase with like little short quips. Like,
there's a lack of Money Penny in this movie too, right?
Yep.
That's a problem.
That's a real problem.
Colin's giving it a soft 2.
No pun intended.
No, I intended all those puns.
No, Diana Rigg's good. there's diversity in the women in the, you know, the allergy death camp or allergy clinic.
Allergy death camp.
That's wrong. That's not correct.
It's not the correct terminology.
So this is Christopher Nolan's favorite Bond movie. This is Steven Soderbergh's favorite Bond movie. This is many critics say this is their favorite Bond movie.
I think they're all full of shit.
Oh, the constant referencing earlier films, the breaking the fourth wall, the preposterous evil plot, the in over his head leading man. Like, have you ever seen the poster of this movie?
Yeah, you guys have seen this, right?
It's hilarious.
Oh, I told you about watching the trailer. They say the word different like 30 times.
But listen.
It's different. It's different.
Yeah, like different is necessarily good. Yeah. So the poster is Lazenby casually ski jumping in a tuxedo with the Walther PPK in hand. And it looks like something from like the Armand Flint, like the parody of the James Bond series. And Lazenby himself looks like a Mad Magazine version of Connery. It is so ridiculous. That basically sums up
what
my
pose is that?
That sums up my feelings on this. This is a 003. And I think I'm being generous there. There's some interesting points, and it's a Bond movie, and it does a lot of the routine stuff okay. But this is a solid 003 for me. I feel like I'm being nice.
I'll give it the post. Yeah, that's great. He's in a bobsled.
Telly Savalas in the bobsled just firing.
I'll give it points for not being like a retread of any of the older movies in the way that You Only Live Twice was kind of like, a retread of Dr. No. I mean, there's really only 5 movies before this. Like, come on, guys. There's plenty of plots out there. They did a good job, at least trying to make this convoluted enough.
It's also long as hell.
It's too long. That was a big detractor for me. Too long. The action just goes on and on. I mean, I thought Bond was good. I would have liked to see him in more Bond movies. I think he would have fulfilled the legacy.
I think the cinematography was all right.
That's always solid. But I think Lazenby, I feel like, or Lazenby or Lazenby.
I think it's Lazenby. Yeah.
Lazenby. I think with a different director, a different script, a different opportunity, I could see how he might have been able to grow into it. But
yeah, I'll admit that.
Okay, yeah, he was like so the worst. There's like some vague potential of him. Yeah.
I mean,
he had nowhere to go but up for you, Colin.
Yeah, pretty much.
He went nowhere. Like, I don't think he did anything after.
Yeah,
this.
I read he acted in Europe and he was in commercials before. I think he did commercials again.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, that's probably the right place for him.
The last thing when I looked him up, last photo of him on the internet was from like 2009 when he was doing like a Comic-Con.
Still handsome.
Well, you guys should definitely watch this documentary if you haven't seen it. It's called Becoming Bond. I have it up right here. It's on Hulu. And it's sort of done with reenactments, but also he's in it and he like tells his story. And, you know, they have other actors playing him.
I also read he showed up at the premiere with long hair and a beard.
Right.
Which in 1969, for someone who doesn't want to do the movie anymore, makes total sense, but also probably made them real mad.
That's exactly how you say, I don't want to be James Bond anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's...
That still might be true.
So the documentary kind of makes it sound like he thought he was, like, hot shit. He was, like, too cool for school. And, you know, it all went to his head, basically. And when they said to him, like, hey, we want you to sign this contract for 7 more movies, which is kind of insane. And they were going to give him, like,
$10
million
That's
or
basically
something.
The next, you know,
he thought 15 he was, to 20 years. He life. Thought he was, like, too good for it. Or, like, he felt almost entrapped by
it's
it.
He's like, well, I'd have plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's like, I don't need this James Bond
thing. Now actors realize when Marvel says, hey, we want you on a 6-movie contract, they're like, roll up that Brinks truck, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's your 00 rating, Matt?
Well, you gave it a 3?
Yeah.
Well, how are we ranking this?
He gave it a 2.5. He gave it a 00 2.5. I gave it a 003.
I gave it a 3 that's less
Don't let us influence you. What did you have?
Yeah, what did you
have? Turn your notes around.
I didn't even write it. I just do it off the cuff.
He's looking at pictures of Gal Gadot at the Oscars.
Yeah, what's up? That's my gal right there.
That's probably better than actually having
just
your notes open.
No, that's just the side of the IMDb.
I'll give it a 3 also. A triple.
Way to cave to peer pressure.
Zero. Triple
All right.
7.
So I think it's fair to say license to watch revoked.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't try.
Yeah, I would skip this one. And you know what? As a kid, I did skip this one. This is my first time seeing this.
Mine too.
Yep.
I did not skip it as a kid.
I used to choose them, like the boxes, like VHS box and Blockbuster Video. And for whatever reason, Honor Majesty's Secret Service just sounds like the title is not
good.
It's a
terrible title. Oh, yeah. We didn't even mention that it's a shitty title.
That's right.
This is not a great
like,
Bond
live,
movie.
Like Live and Let Die. That sounds
that's
awesome.
A good
Moonraker.
That's a good
I'm going to rent
title.
That.
Yeah. I don't even know what Moonraker is, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Blockbuster Video. It doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, any closing shots, any parting shots here, Matt?
Let's see. I might possibly have something not written down. All I have here is it just says, thanks for listening. If you like the show, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Give us a shout out on social media. Please subscribe. Get your friends to subscribe and help us spread the word of Bond. That's pretty much it.
I like the scriptedness there. I think that's a good way to open and close.
Yeah.
Just random chaos in the middle, but at least we've got some structure now. Nicely done.
Yeah, thank you.
Loving the new format. I think this is good.
Yeah. Well, I
the new format was a lot like the old format.
Yeah, it was similar.
Yeah, but it was, I think, shorter.
Yeah. What are we at? Perfect.
Nailed it.
Yeah, we did it.
All right. Until next time.
All right,
Bond
next time
will return in Diamonds
Are Forever.
Bond.